the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Hey, welcome back to the Golf Podcast. Mike, tonight, before we get started, one thing I want to talk about real quick. You and I, whenever possible, you know, we're very appreciative of everything that's come to us with a good fortune, things like that from the podcast. So we try to give back whenever we can. So just recently, actually this past Monday, we played in a charity golf outing and had the podcast make a donation. But you know, I want to mention it here too, because it's something that's kind of like near and dear to me. There's a young man, a 2.5-year-old boy who's in my daughter's preschool class. And unfortunately, recently he was diagnosed with a very aggressive and very rare form of inoperable brain cancer. But he's a tough little guy. Mike, you got to see him there.
Yeah.
You know, he's tough. His family, they're great people. They're all in great spirits. And what I was so happy with, and that's what I mentioned this in the Golf Podcast Facebook group. That's one more reason, Mike, why I love this game. You know, you just don't see communities coming together that often. You know, and I shouldn't say that because it is true. In a lot of sports there are, but it just warms my heart when you see something like golf, a sport we love. And then we can use that sometimes to raise money for things like this. The turnout was amazing.
Amazing.
There were so many, you know, NYPD, you know, cops there and all different groups who just donated their time, donated their money. And just to see that was really great. I posted this on our Twitter account and in our Facebook group, but for anybody out there who's listening, and if you want, you know, a way that you can kind of help, Braden is his name. If you want to help Braden out, I created a link. You can go to golficity.com/Braden, BRAYDEN. And then you can go to that link, and then that'll take you right to his GoFundMe account. And that's just to help his parents pay for some of the medical bills. But again, it's just, you know, I wanted to mention it here because it's just one more thing I love so much about the sport. It just gives us another way to do what we enjoy, but also give back a little bit. So, you know, Mike, I that was a really great day.
Yeah, it was great. And you know that his parents, you know, they're on a tough road ahead, and see that turnout. I hope they made a ton of money that day, and I hope it leads to them, you know, helping to pay for the treatments and everything like that. It really did fill my heart to be there. As you can imagine, that night when I went home, I wrapped my arms around my own family because, you know, seeing that it makes you think about things. So I wish them well, and I'm glad we were able to give back to their family for sure.
Yeah, me too. So now let's talk a little bit about that too, because you and I finally got to play in a scramble together. That's a format we don't play in often, but it was good practice because we have our Myrtle Beach trip coming up shortly, which, mm-hmm. like we said, if anybody wants to follow along with that, just follow us on Instagram. You know, I'm sure we'll be posting stuff in the Golficity, the Golf Podcast Facebook group as well. But if you follow at Golficity on Instagram, we're going to be sharing our stories we did throughout the day. We had a ton of fun out there, Mike. We came in, you know, we didn't win. We came in 6 under, which I think was really respectable. The course was tough. A lot of water out there. A lot of tight fairways. You saw how thin some of those were. We couldn't quite catch the guys in first who came in 15 under.
Yeah, I'm shaking my head at that, but that's another topic.
That's another topic, but I tell right. you, mm-hmm. I don't know if they were pouring it on that strong. I don't think there's anybody out there watching them, but whatever. It doesn't really matter. We're all out there
doesn't
for
matter,
fun.
Right?
You know, mm-hmm. we weren't, like I said, we were all giving back. Nobody was taken from it. So it was a great time, but that scramble format, that can be a lot of fun, but I always struggle with it. How about you?
Yeah, I struggle because like you've said a bunch of times out there, it takes you out of your game. You know, you just have to, you know, you're playing other people's shots. You're not playing your own game. You're off. You're not swinging, you know, as often as you are if you are playing your own ball. You know, I was off. You were off. I think we were all off, really.
It's one of those things that I kind of tell people, like, just if you do play a scramble, just get it out of your head. Like, it's like a separate event from your golf game almost. Like,
right.
Don't carry that into your next thing. Cause I see a lot of times when people play that type of thing and what happens in a scramble, you try to hit shots you normally wouldn't try to hit. And yeah, there's going to be more errors, right? I put a couple of drives in the woods that I normally would have been much more conservative, but you
of
know,
course.
We get a guy out there in the fairway. He's in good shape. What do we try to do, Mike? We try to bomb
crush
it. Yeah. And you know, it's one of those things you just kind of like got to forget about it. Cause I think the hardest thing is sometimes if you carry that into your regular round, like the next day or so, and now, you know, you kind of can lose some confidence that we were talking about all these different ways to build it. So I think that's one of those things, but you're right. It's the rhythm. You know, you kind of feel like when you're playing a scramble, you almost feel like it's a range session more than anything, because you're not the strategy, your own game strategy, it goes away. You're like in different spots and then everybody's taking the same shot. So it's a lot of fun. It's a good way to keep things moving. It's a good way to mix things up, but I don't know. You just got to make sure it doesn't mess up your game.
No, you're right. And what you said before about, you know, going back to play your own game, I actually played the next morning. And it's funny because I got off to a terrible start. I was swinging out of my shoes. You know, I felt like I was still in that scramble mode. But the good news was, I mean, I shot a 48 on the front, which wasn't really that great. But then I went and turned around and did a 43 on the back. I just settled down and I got the game back in shape. I kind of got back into that stroke play rhythm.
Yes.
You know, so you're absolutely right. You know, set your expectations for a scramble versus stroke play. That's for sure.
Yeah, rhythm is exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. So kind of speaking of competition and things like that, I want to talk about the Ryder Cup for a second. Before I do that, I just want to mention tonight's topic. Usually I say that earlier on just to let everybody know what we're going to be talking about. But we're going to talk about how to put some of that backspin on your chip shots. And this is something that is kind of new that I'm working into my game. And just learning from researching for tonight and talking about this, I've been practicing it out there and it's really been fun. It's been a fun process. So I'm looking forward to talking about that tonight, but I want to get your thoughts. You know, by the time the, this episode comes out, it's probably going to be the last round of the Ryder Cup, but we're going into it. We're just a couple of days before kickoff here. Loving seeing the excitement, the hype, lots of controversy already surrounding it. I mean, every 2 years, this is one of my favorite things in golf.
Yeah, it is. And I love team golf. I've mentioned this before, and you and I, we tasted a little bit of team golf at that scramble.
Yeah.
It's such a great thing, you know, to come together as a team. In fact, I just played every year we always do that Advisor Cup, and we won it yesterday on a, on the last hole.
That's
me
awesome.
And my partner, we raised the cup up at the end, this really big trophy. And it just, you know, I love that aspect of this game, relying off each other to beat the other team as opposed to just, you know, single play, which is what we normally see every week on the tour. So I love the Ryder Cup. I mean, the course looks awesome. I've been watching the highlights all day. I have this TV in my office in front of my computers, just, you know, coverage of the Ryder Cup all day long, conferences and everything. So I'm totally into it. I love it. I love seeing Tiger there.
Yeah.
You know, he seems like he's having a good time with those guys. It's just really fun. I can't wait for it to kick off.
It was funny. I think they made a little bit more of it than what it was, but you see the other day with Tiger getting booted out of the team photo.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I love it.
It was a little moment of confusion. Even Tiger was laughing about it. I just don't think, you know, deep down, Tiger's still ready to be out of the spotlight, even though he hasn't been
exactly,
you know, playing. But it's good to see he's going to be coming back. But yeah, I mean, a little bit of controversy. Talk about team stuff with Bubba, you know, getting kind of overlooked. But and you hear a lot of people speculating about his, you know, ability to play in a team environment. But I'm excited for it. The other big controversy, did you see Danny Willett's brothers getting him in a little bit of trouble there?
Saw that.
Yeah. I mean, he was funny, you know, and everybody got a good laugh out of his tweets when he won the Masters. But I think he might be going a little bit too far. He's definitely giving his brother some serious wood to cut, you know, to make up for what he's saying.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, I could see how he's trying to light some fuel and, you know, make it about the rivalry. But, you know, all these stories that come out are great. Great for the game. Great for the competition.
You know, like what? That's right. I mean, to a certain extent, I'm about not taking it too seriously.
Exactly.
You know, have fun. This is what this is about. They're out there having fun. These guys aren't making any money for this. It's for bragging, right? So you might as well start bragging.
Right.
But it's been actually kind of fun. We've been running some polls on our Twitter account and also on our Facebook group. And so we were kind of getting an idea. Early prediction who's going to win, and I don't know right now if it's based on our listener base. Team USA is heavily in the lead here. On our Twitter poll, came in 62% versus 38% for Team Europe. So 62% to what do you call it, to Team USA, and then similarly, actually almost the exact same ratio on our Facebook group. We had 22 votes for Team USA and 9 votes for Team Europe. And even some of the Europe supporters, I hear them saying that they were a little bit more hesitant to throw their hat in the ring until they saw how Rory performed last week.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll see. Everybody plays different. Everybody steps it up. I mean, this guy, like, look at Patrick Reed. That guy, he's a nut for competition, man. He loves it.
He absolutely is. I love it. I love the uniforms. I mean, everything about it. And you know what? Yes, I think on paper, I think America, USA, they got a slight advantage just based on the rookies on the other side. But you never know with these things, right?
You never know. Yeah. I saw it. You don't know necessarily what to believe, but someone said, and I don't know what source it was, but someone said that Reed walked in, you know, talking to the captains, and he was like, "I'm playing all five matches, and I'm only playing with Spieth."
Did he really? I didn't even hear that. Wow.
That's supposedly what he said. Okay. But you got to love a little bit of like fire under these guys, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So all these things, if you want to get involved in the conversation, we love to hear from you guys, all our listeners. If you haven't joined yet, definitely make sure to join our new Facebook group. It's a free public group. Just search The Golf Podcast on Facebook. Very easy to find. And it's a great place where we post polls like this and we talk about the show. And it's just great ways for you guys to suggest things. And I really love hearing from you guys when we hear some of the stuff that's helping you, or you're posting your rules questions or whatever it may be. It's becoming a really, really great resource. So definitely check that out. Another thing I want to mention real quick, obviously, you know, we have to pay our respects to Arnold Palmer. Unfortunately, we lost. That was a little bit of a surprise. Yeah. I know he wasn't in the best health. We saw at the Masters this year, he didn't play for the first time in that par three, right? He didn't play with
them. Right, he didn't play with it. Mm-hmm. He didn't play.
Yeah, but he was there, you know, and I think it's going to be it's sad now, but it's really going to ring true. I think when the Masters comes around next April, it's the first time not having him there. But you know, man, Mike, you and I, guys like us, we gotta really give, you know, thanks to him because of what he did for this game. I mean, you don't realize it. I mean, he in a lot of ways, his play predates you and I. You know, we get to see it in flashback stuff, but we were too young to really watch him play. But we can still feel the effects of what he did for the game, without a doubt. I mean, opening it up to more people, making it more popular. They show the explosion of growth of golf courses being built and stuff like that after he really came into the sport.
Yeah.
He made it more of, like I said, a blue collar type of thing. And you just see like all the different, whether it be us or all these other golf resources that are out there, and just guys like you and I just talking about it. I think really he laid a lot of that groundwork. So we have a lot, you know, that we owe him for that.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. He was great. Great for the game. You know, I never knew that he was that much younger than Jack. You know, like Jack actually looked up to him. I always thought they were really close in age. You know, I never really.
He's older than
Jack. I'm sorry. Yeah. Older. That's what I meant. Older than Jack. Right.
Well, Jack came in, you know, it was towards the middle end of Arnie's career. Right. And you know, it was a tough road for Jack too, because you had Arnie's army out there, you know, booing him. They didn't want to see that. But I think what happened was with his play, you know, Jack didn't have the charisma, you know, that Arnold did, but with his play and how unbelievably dominating he was, he just through the years, just, you know, earned that respect, which I think is a really cool thing too.
Yeah. For
and
sure.
And what was really great was the friendship that the two of them had. You know, and the other one too, being Gary Player, we had him on the show last year. You know, we had the good fortune of speaking with him. But interesting, really, really interesting.
Really interesting.
And
he'll be missed.
He certainly will be. One last thing, Mike, before we jump into tonight's topic, I want to remind everybody, I know I just started talking about at the top of the show, but if you don't already do so, make sure you follow at Golficity on Instagram. 2 weeks from now, you and I are going to be doing a show from Myrtle Beach. We're going to be playing in a media tournament down there. It's a 3-day, 2-man tournament. So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, travel, our experience traveling down there, because I know a lot of people, especially here in the Northeast, we've got the off season coming up. I know a lot of you guys are going to be planning your trips, your getaways, you know, and stuff like that. So we're going to see what other type of like travel tips and hacks we can give you. I know there's been a couple episodes we've talked about this before, but it's always great knowledge. We're going to talk about, you know, getting our clubs down there and back. We're going to talk about a lot of different things and our experience playing again. You know, it's going to be a 2-man best ball. Should be a lot of fun. Talk about that, you know, competitive golf. So I'm looking forward to that, but you can follow along. We're going to be sharing our stories, you know, our Instagram stories. You can see what we do each day. Mike and I are going to kind of just take over the Golficity account for a couple days, and you'll be able to follow along and see what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, Frank. And I'm really excited to use that ship stick services, that service, you know, shipping the sticks down there and, you know,
me too,
having them wait.
You know what? That was the one thing that I was dreading. Like, it's so easy to go to Myrtle Beach and we can just kind of fly out here out of New York City. But I'm like dragging my clubs through, checking that bag, worrying about it. You know, is it going to get damaged? Right. So I haven't tried ship sticks yet, and I'm excited to give it a shot. And,
yeah, likewise.
You know, how cool is that? You know, get them picked up and then we arrive and our clubs are there ready to go. So I'm really interested, and it's going to be really fun to report back here how all that went.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We definitely will report back. And before we jump into the topic, I just want to tease our listeners that we have another smaller giveaway coming. We'll talk about it next week. But one of our friends, Chris, who's a listener of the show, he runs a website, a business, awesome golf gear, fun golf gear. We're going to give away a nice package. But again, we'll talk about that next week on next week's show.
Yeah, it's like we said, we had our big giveaway last week. And congrats again to all of our winners. But that's not going to be the end of it. Where we had such a great response, and we said we've always want to try to give back as much as we can. So we're going to be just constantly looking for things that we can do to give back to you guys. We're going to run some fun contests. And if you have any suggestions for it, post it in the Facebook group. You know, like I said, we want to hear what you guys want. We want to hear not only topics, but whatever it may be. This is your show as much as it is ours. So we want to hear that. So Mike, let's get a little bit into some instruction here, because this is a topic that, like I said, I've been having a lot of fun with. When I combine this with what we talked about a couple weeks ago, where we talked about how to stop decelerating your club, I think when I combine the two, they've really helped me shave some strokes. Just in our tournament that we played Monday, I mean, we finished it. I chipped in on the 18th for birdie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that chip in, you know, gave us another stroke, put us, you know, a little bit closer to that lead. So that's the type of stuff. And honestly, I'll be very truthful with you. Just a couple weeks ago, I was decelerating so bad on my chips that would have never happened. So I had that and what we're going to talk about tonight in my head on that chip shot, and it just worked. But what we're going to talk about tonight is how to put that backspin on your chip shots. Sometimes, you know, a lot of newer amateur golfers, and even myself not too long ago, you just kind of feel like when you see that ball, when the guys chip it and it just spins back and just stops dead on the green, you just kind of feel like it's a little bit of a magic trick, you know?
Right.
It's like, where are these pros pulling that from? I'll never be able to do that. This is a pro thing only. But here's the thing. It can be done. You know, it can be done. It's something that I don't care what your skill level is. If you work on it and you follow what we're going to talk about tonight, it's something that you can add to your game. And when you do, it is another shot that can be a big asset in certain situations. And we're going to talk about that too, because you got to understand, just because you can hit the shot doesn't mean it's the appropriate shot all the time. All right. And this in particular, there are times when you don't want to put that type of backspin on your chip shot. There are times when you want it to get, you know, down and rolling and run towards that pin. And then there's going to be other times where you want it to stop as quickly as it can. But let's start here. The first thing that I want to talk about before we get into technique, before we get into any type of practice or anything like that. First things first, if you really want to master the shot, you do have to make sure that your equipment is prepared for it. Okay. So before we get into those technical details, let's talk a little bit about the two parts of the equation that equipment wise have to happen in order to make this work. Right. And the first one is the club. Now, Mike, this is something I'm going to be very honest with you. I had no idea before I started researching this. You know, what we do, you and I, we try to talk to, because we're not pros ourselves. We try to talk to a lot of pros, teaching pros, things like that, when we try to get these ideas and learn these shots. And one thing that came back, and I heard this a lot, is you really need to use as high a lofted club as you can on these shots. So if you've got a 60 degree wedge in your bag, that's what you want. Could you make a 56 or a 58 work? Sure you could. But the more loft, the better. Because remember, what you're going to try to do with these shots is get that ball up in the air and get that backspin on it. And without enough loft, you're going to run into issues. That's where that ball is going to kind of run. Now,
right.
This mic is actually what's reinvigorated the 60 degree wedge for me. Recently, and this is something that I've advocated here on the show, I've been working with just my 52 as for all my chip shots. And this is something that, again, if you're a real beginner, I still think a good idea is to stick to just one club for your chip shots until you've got a decent chip down. I think sometimes what can happen is if you're just first learning to chip, you try it with too many different things and you can't quite develop that feel. I see guys, if it's a little bit longer chip, they're chipping with a 7-iron. If it's a little bit less, they're chipping with their sand wedge and they're going back and forth. That's where I became an advocate. Just get the feel down. Just as long as you can get that consistent flight, you can just kind of alter how far you hit it. But when you're ready to start fine-tuning it and start to work things like this into your game, that's where you do need to fine-tune that equipment a little bit, all right? So I reworked the 60 in. I am chipping with the 60 when I want to hit this type of shot, and it really does help, that little bit of extra loft. The other thing is the ball. You know, mm-hmm. not all balls are going to offer the same amount of spin. And we've talked about this before. You really need to, in a way, get fitted for a ball that fits to your game. And you could do that yourself just by kind of researching it and seeing what you need and what you want. But if you're the type of person who's, you know, playing a really hard ball, like a cheaper, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, you know, for an amateur who is having trouble, a lot of trouble controlling how straight they hit their ball flight. Sometimes a harder ball is better. You want to reduce spin. We've said before, just because a Pro V1 is considered the best ball, quote unquote, right? I don't play it because I don't prefer it, but just because it's that, a lot of people think, well, that's the best for everyone. And it's not true. A ball like that is going to generate too much spin for somebody who's a 15 to 20 handicap, right?
Right.
So that's where it's going to hurt you in other areas of the game. But again, when you're ready to move into this part of your game and you want to be able to do that, you are going to need a softer ball that produces more spin, right? So those harder top flights and stuff like that, they're just not going to perform as well. Now, personally, me, I love the Callaway Chrome soft. That's what I've been playing. I've been playing that since 3UP. Stop producing their golf balls because I found that to be the most similar feel. I like a soft cover. I feel like I can get more spin and I feel like I can get more feel on my putts, which I think are the most important things in my game. But that's what you have to do. You got to make sure you've got a little bit of a softer ball if you're going to want to put that spin on it. That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. And right now in my hand, I'm holding a box of these TaylorMade Tour Preferred X golf balls. And right on the back, Frank, it shows you a little grid: performance, feel, driver spin, distance, short game spin, iron spin, and iron flight. And right next to it, it'll say the feel is soft and the short game spin is very high. So right there, it tells me that this is the ball I need to do this.
Yes.
You know, for my game. So I picked up these for our trip and I'm looking forward to hitting these around.
Yeah. And when they're truthful is what I like the most. I don't particularly care for sometimes when you see on these golf balls where they try to claim that it does everything. It's,
right.
Mm-hmm. It's long, it's soft, it's all these things. Okay, I get it. It can to a certain extent be the Callaways that I play. I feel like I haven't lost any distance because it's close to the compression that's right for me. Mm-hmm. I think it's more so just finding something that fits you and works with your game. But right. You'll know the difference. I mean, I'm within those, you know, higher quality balls in the manufacturers, there's not going to be that much variation for this shot. Where I'm saying is the extremes. A very soft ball like a Chrome Super Soft versus a very hard ball like a you know, Top Flight that you get, you know, for $12 a dozen or whatever.
Right.
You're going to feel that difference on this shot. But the other ones, you don't have to worry about fine tuning it too much. But I just want people to be cognizant of that. The ball is going to make some of that difference on it.
It's a good point because most amateurs are just playing any ball that they pick up out of the woods.
Right.
So.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If you are, then take a bunch of them to your practice session and hit a couple different ones and see which one gives you the best feel around the green.
Yeah,
once it does, go out and get those, you know, and mm-hmm. and if it's an expensive ball, well, there's also second chance options, you know, those ones where they recover the balls from the water.
Right.
And you get, so you can still play your ball and it's a little bit cheaper. So,
right. Mm-hmm.
So, okay. After we move through that equipment, let's talk about the setup, you know, and like any shot, and we've talked about this before, it's so important. You know, a quality stance, a good setup, it's really going to set yourself up for the shot, okay? Very often what we see is that guys who are new to the game kind of rush through their setup and then they kind of like don't quite understand what went wrong. You know, there's so much to balance. There's so much to shaft position, things like that. And that's where we see even the pros taking a lot of time with their setup. And that could be something you work into your pre-shot routine, whatever it may be. But there's a couple important notes with the setup for this shot specifically, and we'll go through those one by one. The first thing is, you want to take a middle ball position. You know, many chip shots are often played towards the back of your stance. And the reason for that being you want to promote that downward hit at impact. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the right option a lot of the time. But when you want to hit that chip shot that's going to, you know, stop quickly, that's not what you want to do. To spin the ball with a lofted wedge, you want to play that ball more towards the middle of your stance at address. That way at impact, you're going to move the club under the ball and allow it to spin to be developed on the face. And that's really something that's only going to happen with around midpoint in your stance. So remember that. And I do this when I'm chipping, when I'm doing a chip and run type of thing. What do? I move the ball forward. You know, I move my feet close together. Right. Or sometimes you can move it back and do that shaft lean. But here, what we want to do is keep that ball right in that middle of your stance. And I know some of this stuff, it's a little bit lends itself better to seeing it in pictures and video than me explaining it here. So what I'll do is I will link to in the show notes the article on Golficity that has a lot of images to go along with this, a lot of diagrams. And it also has a great video on YouTube that we link to really showing this done. Because I think when you see it, it really kind of helps. So before you go out there and try it, you know, listen to what we're saying here, then check that out. Go to golficity.com/episode136. That'll have a link right to this, all this information. And then that leads right into the number two thing is making sure that you have a vertical shaft position. So what having a vertical shaft is going to do, it's going to really help promote that loft. Remember, in order to get backspin, more to stop that ball, we want that ball to travel a little bit higher and we want it to have more chance in the air to have that spin. Okay. Where you're punching and running it low, which is what a chip shot, a lot of us think of, what are we going to do? You're going to lean that shaft forward. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? You get that feel where you really push it forward. That's, you know, great. That's perfectly fine with a chip and run shot. But you're going to lose loft. Anytime you move that shaft forward, moving the hands forward relative to the face, what you're doing is you're effectively de-lofting that club. So okay. you're taking mm-hmm. a 60 and you're turning it into much less. Okay. And when you de-loft it, you have less of a face for that ball to ride up and create that backspin. So you got to avoid that temptation to push your hands forward. I think a lot of the reason why we do it because you want to make that nice contact where you're not kind of dipping under it or whatever it may be. But that's where you kind of have to kind of take those practice swings and make sure you're doing it right. But you want to make sure you do that. So just make sure you keep that shaft as vertical as possible. Fight that tendency to lean it forward. All right. What you do want to lean is a little bit is your body. So that's the number three thing is do a slight, very slight lean with your body towards the target. Okay. So even though you have that ball in the middle of your stance and you still want to hit down on it just slightly because hitting down is what's going to create that backspin. So again, what a lot of people do, they shift the shaft forward in order to force themselves to hit down on it. But when you do that, you're de-lofting. So now you're trying to create a situation where you're going to hit down on it, but you're coming at it with a vertical shaft angle with a high loft. That's going to help you get that backspin. All right. So leaning towards that target just slightly is going to help you hit down on it. Okay. And that's something that for a right-handed golfer, you're going to put a little bit more of a weight into your left foot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to make you to have that cleaner impact. And that's one thing in general that we're going to talk more soon about striking your irons pure and stuff like that. One common thing people like, they think so much about where they're making contact with the ground and their hands and stuff like that. But so much of that, when you miss that way, it's because of balance. It's a balance issue. So right. where something that's just not thought of enough by amateurs, but is thought of a lot by pros is balance. So you're going to work that in, and even on a smaller shot like this. So make sure, you know, when you head to that practice chipping area to work on the spinning chip, you want to hit, you know, on each of those positions in your address. You want to make sure the ball's in middle position, you know, like I said, equipment-wise, greater loft, middle position, vertical shaft, not a forward shaft lean, and just slight body weight lean towards the target. Okay? So now you got the setup. The swing. And believe it or not, the execution of the swing is a lot easier once you've got that setup down, you know, and I see where a lot of the issues might be, at least with myself and what I've experienced is if I'm not set up properly, that's when the swing tends to be a problem. But once you're set up properly, this is what you want to do. I mean, and the most important part of this, and this is the part that trips a lot of people up because it makes a lot of people feel uncomfortable, is that you're going to need to use some speed at impact with this swing. And this is where a lot of people get tripped up. It's hard sometimes when you're making a close chip, especially to a tight pin, which would be the reason why you're using that backspin, right? That's where it gets a little bit, you know, hairy, where you don't want to take that kind of big, you know, faster swing. But remember, the idea is to fly the ball up close before that spin brings it to a stop. And the only way to do that is to put a little bit more speed on it than you would like a punch and run. Okay. Because again, the ball's not going to be rolling out, and keeping that speed up, it's going to be the biggest challenge when learning the shot. That's why I am not an advocate of anyone listening to this and then going out and trying this during a round.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
is something to practice and gain the confidence in it in the practice chipping area, you know, and then it goes right into what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, Mike, about decelerating the club. Because if you do, you can have your setup perfect, you got everything perfect, and then you start decelerating your club with that high loft, what's going to happen, especially if you're in a little bit of rough, you're going to probably cut right under that ball. It's not going to go anywhere. It's not even going to reach the green. If you have the setup right, it's setting you up to be able to take that bigger swing. So keeping that speed up, that's going to be a challenge. But as you work on spinning the ball, just think about brushing the club under the ball, along the top of the grass, brushing the club. That makes sense?
It makes sense. And you probably just answered my question I was going to ask you about. Why do I always get spin when I come out of a greenside bunker? I feel like I'm flying through the ball in a bunker as opposed to just lightly chipping it from off the grass. So is that fact that I'm coming out of the bunker with a hard swing allowing me to get that spin? And that's what you're saying here?
In a lot of ways it is, because if you think about a greenside bunker shot, you're doing a lot of similar things. One, you're not leaning that shaft forward, right? Because what's going to happen? You're just going to pound it. And it's a good way to think about it. I'm glad you brought that up. If you lean that shaft forward, visualize doing that in a bunker, you're just going to pound it into the sand. You want to lift that ball up.
Exactly.
So you have that nice vertical lean, and then you're taking that nice big swing. Now, in the bunker, the difference being you're not actually making contact with the ball on a good swing. You're actually taking that sand and letting that throw it up there. But that's why you take an even bigger swing, is so you need to cut through some heavy sand. Mm-hmm. Here, you don't have to need that type of power. You just need to be able to let that club do the work. So,
gotcha.
One of the things that's going to lead to the most success with this, and I think what trips people up, is they feel like with that high lofted club, you know, especially if you're on a tight lie, right? And you're trying to do this from a tight lie. What's the concern? You're either going to go underneath it, right? And we get those lofted clubs, and we've had that frustration before, Mike. We know we kick ourselves. You and I, when we're playing together, like, we always tell each other not to do that, and we do it, right? And you cut right under the ball. Or the other thing is you hit it thin. And that's the worst on a close
shot. Yeah, yeah.
Because what's it do? It takes off across the green. So the best thing to do, not only to practice this off the course, but before you take the shot, anytime before you take the shot, take more practice swings than you normally would, and just brush the grass, brush the grass, brush the grass. You may have saw, I did this a couple times in our outing, Mike, where I was just like, kept doing it, brush the grass. And all I'm doing is getting the muscles used to just that depth. You know, that's where the impact point is. Just brush the grass. And if I feel like I'm digging in, you know, I'm taking like almost a divot on my practice swing, or I'm not quite making contact with the grass, I will not set up to that shot until I've got it down. And then after I brush that grass perfectly a couple times, that's when I'll make the shot, because then that's why I practiced it. All I need to do is do it one more time. Just replicate it.
Yeah.
So just brush the grass. And again, there's a video that I'll link to, actually put together one of my favorites on YouTube. There's a lot of junk instruction on YouTube, honestly, but then there's some really good ones. And one of the ones I really like are the Me and My Golf guys.
Sure.
Terrific, terrific advice, and always great demonstrations. And they talk about this, and they show brushing that grass. But again, practice, that's going to be your most important thing to learn how to execute the shot, and most importantly, build confidence. Because the second you lack that confidence, your arms are going to get tight. That's when you're going to hit that ball thin, or you're going to decelerate. You're going to cut underneath it. You got to be confident that you're going to make it work in order to have this work. And that confidence is going to come through practice. Okay. One thing in this, Mike, that we didn't really talk about is when to use one and when to use the other shot. Just because this shot looks pretty when you do it right doesn't mean you should do it all the time. The longer that ball is in the air, the more there is room for error You know, it can be very difficult to get your distance exactly right and carry it all the way to the hole, right? And if it executes right, it's not going to roll out. It's going to stop pretty much where it lands, right? But this is why a lot of times they say if you can putt it, do it, because you get that ball rolling and it's a consistent type of experience and whatever it may be. So if you're going to a pin that's way far away and you've got a lot of green between you, let's say you're not on the short side, right? So you're on, what do we call it, the long side or whatever.
Right.
And the pin's on the other side. This is not your play. There's no reason to fly it over all that green and try to stop it and land it by that pin. Again, just because it looks good doesn't mean it's the right play. There, the smarter play, we talk about course management, we talk about strategy and game plan. The smarter play is going to be that chip and run, right? Mm-hmm. Chip it, let it run the distance. You know what I mean? And that's where you can do more of a vertical shaft lean and that type of thing, the chip that we're kind of more familiar with. But if you're tight, you know, you don't have a lot of green with work with, you're on the short side and you almost can't, we've seen that before where it's like, it's almost rough and then green, right? And then what happens if you try to chip it, you know, and you don't get it up out of that rough, you know, you're stuck. That's where you need to lift it and stop it. That's where you're going to want to be using this shot.
Yeah. That reminds me of that par three, the only hole we bogeyed that day, you know, we were off the green and we were trying to get cute around the green and a lot of us left it short and someone hit it a little long and it's a tough little shot. But, you know, I got to ask you a question. I know we're talking chip shots. I know we're talking close to the green, but just for my own, you know, I just want to know these guys on tour and I know it's tough to compare, you know, ourselves with these guys, but let's take it back 100 yards when they're hitting 9-iron, pitching wedge, 8-iron. Yeah. How are they pulling the string back on these balls so much? Is it same deal, vertical shaft position, middle ball? Are they doing the same type of thing here?
It's largely a lot of the same concept. And for anybody who hasn't had a chance to check it out, definitely on Golficity, we've got a lot of great articles. We may have even done a podcast or two on just putting that spin on the ball.
Yeah, but we did.
You know what it really comes down to, Mike? It's, again, it's physics, okay? There's so many times, especially with us amateurs, we think that, or we get this idea in our mind that we need to lift the ball into the air. You know, and what we start to do with these higher lofted clubs, we start to like almost swing up on it, right? We feel right. like we're scooping it into the air because we feel like that's what's creating the backspin, but it's not. What these guys are just doing is they're hitting such a perfect down impact. And the proof of that is every single time you see those shots where it stops, you know, they hit an 8-9 iron, you know, 150 yards into a green, it stops dead. The one thing you'll always see is they have a excellent, amazing divot out in front of where that ball was, which means, you know, proof again, physics, they had to hit down on that ball. And that's the way you really, the club and the ball are designed to work together. The way you get spin, the way you get that ball to take off high in the air is when you hit down on it and compress it, the ball actually rides up the loft of the club. And that as it's doing that, the more time it's on that surface area of the club, it's actually generating that backspin. Sometimes the guys call it the pinch, mm-hmm. you know, where you're actually feeling like you're pinching that ball between the ground and the whatever. So you're hitting, it almost seems like a weird reverse concept that you're hitting down, like hitting the ball almost down into the ground and it takes off high. And that's what takes a while to get that feel down, but that's what they're doing. And because of the fact that they're applying such amazing club head speed to it, they're generating a lot of spin and impact, you know,
yeah.
Some of us, sure, you know, we're hitting it well and stuff like that. But, you know, even if we're striking it fairly well, they're putting that just a little bit more club head speed on it and those types of things. And that's where they're feeling it. And that's where you're seeing that backspin. Plus there's other factors at play. Like I said, they have the control to play a higher spin ball. They're often playing a higher spin ball.
Sure.
They're also very often playing greens that are a little, you know, more well manicured than the municipal courses we're playing at. The greens are a little bit softer. So it's able to bite a little bit. I don't care who you are. If you're playing a green that's like a rock, it's just not going to stop that, you know, the way you want it to stop. And that's where the pros are smart too. They'll adjust. You know, we talk about strategy. You'll see like a couple of years ago, it was one of the British Opens where it was just really windswept and dry. The greens were like hard as rocks. And you didn't see that. You didn't see that type of shot. The guys were smart enough to know that they couldn't stop it on the green. Mm-hmm. And some of them were landing it just short and letting it roll up to the pin. You saw a lot more rolling right up to the pin. So they understand their conditions. And the one other thing that I would say, and I'm not kind of making excuses for us not being able to do it, but they're also very good at reading the greens. Sometimes when it looks like a lot of backspin, it's because they're hitting slopes. Now, sure, they're spinning it, yes, but they know where to hit on those slopes, that they're using that to come back down towards the pin. They know if it slopes down towards the pin, they're hitting just above it and letting it roll back a little bit. You know, they got their caddies with pages of notes on every undulation of those greens, and they know where to hit. But more importantly, they have the skill set to put it at that spot of the green. We're just going for greens.
Right. We're just going for greens. You're absolutely right. They do have those stats, not to mention they're playing it all week leading up to the event. But, you know, I'm just curious because, you know, watching these guys on TV, and yes, the backspin is all great and fancy. It's, ooh, you know, when you see it, wow, look, he brought it all the way back to the hole. But what's more impressive, Frank, is when they stop it dead right next to the pin. Dude, that's what I want to be able to do.
I know. I mean, amazing. Like, I just in this video, I'm just looking at that vine with
Bill Haas. Yeah.
Bill Haas out of the water when he won that.
You know, stops
it dead.
Stops it dead. You know what's funny? I wanted to mention this real quick, not to go off topic, but during that little cup match I had the other day on the 16th hole, we were dead heat, and I was a par five, and I went for it in two, and I hit the right side of the green. It trickled down into the water. So I said, okay, you could drop up there because it hit the grass. You know, you could drop it right there and hit four. And I saw it sitting up so pretty in the water. I started taking my shoes and socks off. My playing partner's like, Mike, no, don't do this. I was like, I could do this. I've seen Bill Haas do it. I've seen guys on tour do it so many times. I could do it. It's sitting up nice. He talked me into just taking the drop. I hit it close and I made a six. But that is watching this thing over and over again. I'm just, you know, laughing about that from yesterday. But
well, for every Haas shot like that I see on Instagram, has to be a thousand
misses, right?
Where the guys go in and they end up there in the water by the end of the shot. But exactly. You know what? Here's one thing to think about. And again, one person who's a master of this is Phil Mickelson. He knows and he thinks through every shot. He thinks about how the lie and everything is going to affect the way the club impacts and stuff like that. I remember hearing him talk through a ball that he played off the cart path one time. And he was saying, like, well, it's not that surprising the effect that it had, because he talked about it. He said where it was going. But one thing that guys don't think about sometimes, forget sand for a second, the density of water. Right?
Yeah. Hey,
you know, if you want to try it out, if you're by your swim, you have a swimming pool near you or something like that, go near it, take a swing and feel what happens to your club the second it impacts that water.
Yeah.
The amount of speed that just takes off of it. Now, if you look at that Haas shot, I'm not taking anything away from the guy. It was awesome, but he was smart enough that he knew the play that he could hit it because 3/4 of the ball was above the water. So he was able, if you look, he splashes, he really, and again, in all the concepts we talk about here, he's standing upright, you know, middle of his stance. He has got a vertical shaft with that, and he's got a little bit of weight in his forward foot, and he's standing up tall. So he's just, you know, he's not digging it. He's just hitting down on that ball, but he doesn't hit way behind it because he knows if you hit way behind it, that water is going to stop that club. And in under the water, that club's going to do some erratic things.
Sure.
You know, here's where he makes contact with that ball first. It's almost like just a shallow shot splashing out of a bunker is what he did. And that's where it like goes to your point. But when you get these guys where the ball is all the way underwater, but they can see it, they think they're going to hit it.
I know. Yeah, true. Man, his shot was for $10 million. Mine was for, I think, $15 and a trophy. So,
well, for $10 million, I think all of us would get a little wet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that's it. But it's a fun thing. Like I said, it's a fun thing to try. If you do out there, don't get discouraged if you're not getting that spin the first couple of times. It's going to take time to get that feel. And once you do, you feel it, you'll be able to replicate it. But start with that. Start with the equipment. Move on to the setup. Then work your way into the swing we're talking about. And then practice. But even before you take that shot, just take some time. Brush the ground. Just keep doing it. Brushing it until you got that feel and you got it in your mind and you got it down. Because I'm telling you, when you don't have that point of contact, you're either going to do one of two things. Either cut under it or hit it thin. And neither one of them is pretty. So.
Yep.
All right. So that's everything we have for you tonight. We're going to be back with more instruction again next week. And then like I said, shortly thereafter, we're going to be traveling down to Myrtle Beach. We're going to be doing a show from down there. It's going to be a little bit of a different format. We want to bring you guys some different things. But again, I want to thank everybody for listening. If you haven't done so yet, make sure you join our Facebook group. Just search The Golf Podcast on Facebook. Again, everything we talked about tonight, the visuals, anything you want to see, you can go to golfisty.com/episode136. We'll link to everything there. I'll also link to Braden's GoFundMe on there, so you can check that out. And if you want to help out, that's a great way to do so. So that's everything we have. Again, thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you all again next week.